Right? Why are we addressing Mishenich Nesav Mamat and Mesimcha Erev Rosh Chodesh Adar? The Gemara says in Tainus, the Chavtes Amar Aleph, Omer of Yehuda, Raider of Shmuel Vashelas, Mishmeid Rav, in the name of Rav. Kishem Shemishenich Nesav Mamat and Mesimcha, just as there's a din of Mishenich Nesav Mamat and when Ador begins, we're marba b'simcha. So the Shas relates these two. And the question is, what did we learn from this Mishnah? What's the kishem? What did I learn from the Mishnah, Mishenich Nesav Mamat and B'simcha, which teaches me something about Mishenich Nesav Mamat and B'simcha? The two opposites. That's number one. Number two is when we talk about Mishenich Nesav Mamat and B'simcha, so the Shulchan Aruch has all types of things you can't do. You can't wash your clothes and you can't do no bosser or no yayin. All types of halachas. We have a whole roster of halachas that are relevant. Mishenichnas, right? We don't have weddings, whatever. All types of things we don't do. Play music. Mishenichnas Ador Marvin B'simcha. There's not a single halacha in the Shulchan Aruch. So what are you supposed to do? Now the Gemara says, does say, Omer Rav Papa Hilchach, consequently, Bar Yisrael Diyisle Dinah Bahadi Nochri, if a Jew has a lawsuit with a non-Jew, Dishtamit Meneba Ov, so push it off from the Chodesh of Ov, push it to Elul. Why Dereya Mazle? Because we have bad mazle. It's not propitious for us. However, if he has dealing in a lawsuit, this time of the year, make himself available, get it scheduled. In this time of the year, because we have good mazel. Now, we cannot say that this is the sole impact of Mishenich Nesador Marv B'Simcha, because Omer Rav Papa Hilchach, therefore, meaning this is a corollary of Mishenich Nesador Marv B'Simcha. Since that is true, there's something else which is true. But it's clearly not the perish of Mishenich Nesador Marv B'Simcha. So what do we want with Mishenich Nesador Marv B'Simcha? So we know the Mishnah, the beginning of Megillah, says there are five zmanim to read the Megillah. Yud Aleph, Yud Beis, and Yud Gimel. But the people that lived in the Hicktowns, and Rashi said they didn't have someone to read for them. So consequently, on the days that they came for business, so one of the townspeople read for them. But we have, of course, the 14th and the 15th that we know. So, Chayra, there are five zmanim. But this Arushalmi and Halach and the Shulchan Aruch, there's another zman too. At the end of the last Sif, Simon Tov Reish Peches, Sif Ches, Ben Ir Shohaya Besfina, Obederach. Obanir set sail before Purim, and he's under sail on Purim. Oh, he's traveling in some place. Aloch Zayin. I'm a forest b'yom b'yaitze b'shayor, a person that goes undertakes a journey on the sea, or a caravan that goes off out of normal society. When he doesn't have a megillah to take along, yikra'ena b'yud gimel or b'yud beis or b'achar osa b'lay brocha. He can also read it on those days, but he doesn't make a brocha. Let's say he can't leave on Yud Aleph, Yud Beis, and Yud Gimel. He has to leave earlier on. So he has none of those possibilities. Yesh Oimrim, some say Shekoyre, Afila Metchilas HaChayvish. He reads from the beginning of the Chayvish, from the beginning of Chayvish Adol. Now what's the basis? The Gemara says a whole complicated cheshbon, but the Gemara has a couple of psukim from which it derives the fact that in Yud Aleph and Yud Beis it's possible to read the Megillah. So where do we get another halacha that earlier on in that, for a real shasat chak that one could lay in? So there's a pasuk. We have to understand the English based on it. This is really, it's a Yerushalmi, but it's based on a pasuk. Pasuk states in the ninth chapter of the Megillah, there it talks about Al Kain Koru Layomim Waila Purim Hashem Apur Al Kain are called the Rehu Igeres Azus. And because of everything that was written, this little Maro Akochum Gialeim, what he felt this way, what they experienced. Kimu v'kiblu Yehudim, and they accepted upon themselves, right, to be Mekayim. Aleihem v'alzarim v'kol anufim v'lo yavar li'os eisim v'shtei yonim v'lo kichsav v'chizmanam v'chol shonu v'shonu. So this passage talks about 2 days. Good. Earlier in the passage of Aleph, the kayem aleihem li'os eisim. In other words, not only should they celebrate in the year that they were victorious, but in every year we should celebrate. As those days when the Jews celebrated in their victory over Haman. Then the Pasuk has a very curious phrase. In the month, that was transferred, was from yogon, from anguish, l'simcha, to joy, and my evil from mourning to yont. L'aseis oysam, and my mishta, b'simcha, m'shloch manas ish l'reyo, matonos lev yonim. So what is the phrase, v'chaydash, ashenabach lehem, yogon, l'simcha? What is this? Where do we have a din in chaydash? We have a din yir aleph, yir beyes, yir gimel, which comes from different psukim. But where's a din of v'chaydash, ashenabach lehem, yogon, l'simcha? This is the marker of the Rishalmi, that the Chayidish is also significant. And that a person that's going to start traveling, closer to Purim, he will not have a Megillah accessible. So any time after Rosh Chayidish Adar, he can read the Megillah. Pashtus is without a brocha. It's only Yeshayim Shekari Afilu Metchilas HaChayidish. And the Ramos says, "V'hochi nog." But if you get it, goes on. Miyum, this damelo achar kach megillah. Let's say he happens to come to a place where there's a megillah. Chayis of a koriyos of yom yudalad. Afilu kora tchila biyom yud gimel. Even he read it in the 13th. Mikomokom kora yisoshaloi bizmana. He read it at the wrong time. So the Ramos says, "V'hochi nog," that a person that travels and won't have a megillah any time after Aleph Adar can read the megillah. Why? Because a chaydash ashenepach lehem yogon l'simcha me'evil yomtov. It's a din in the chaydash too. Not only a din in the days, but there's a din in the chaydash. Now, what did we derive? What was the equation? Just kishem, just as it's true, mishenichnis of. Mimadin b'simcha, kishenichnes ador is marmin b'simcha. The chaydash may be a chaydash that's propitious, and Av is a chaydash that's not so propitious. But that does not necessarily indicate that I have to do anything different because of that. Who says it affects me? It's a fact. But the fact that Chazal instituted so that shows that at a time, if there's a time, at a chaydash, is considered part and parcel of that time, as we see by Chaydash HaShenepach Lehem Yogo L'Simcha. The Chaydash is also significant. So that's Koveya, how we have to act. Now, the Kfiyus, the things that we don't do, is not the Pshat. That's really the manifestation of the Avelus. The Avelus is an inner thing. Within our souls, a person feels evil. But a person can't live in dissonance. His outer life and his inner life have to be in harmony with each other. A person can't be evil. They just get up and put on the music and start to dance and party. The two don't fit together. So we created halachas that the external situation should be comparable and in harmony with what in an inner sense has to be. But evil is an inner sense. Evil is not an external. All the manifestations of Avelus are to create a harmony between the way we're living and what we should be feeling. But it's not the essence. The essence of the evil is not the outer expressions. The essence of evil is evil, mourning. But we have many, many expressions that are outer expressions of it, but all of them are to combine, to connect to an inner expression. And I think from that standpoint, that's what the Gemara derived. Mishenichnas ador marbim besimcha. There's no new halacha that came from it, because the halachas are secondary. What it mandates is an inner feeling, a feeling of joy, of ecstasy. And that's what we derive. Just as Chodesh Av demands a certain bearing, Chodesh Ador demands a certain bearing. And where does it express itself? So I come back to something that I've touched many, many times before. It expresses itself in every mitzvah that we do in Chodesh Ador. No particular. Yeah, Purim has its mitzvahs. But the overall, Mishenichnas Ador Marvin B'Simcha, means each mitzvah that we do comes from the standpoint of simcha. A different enthusiasm, a different appreciation of a relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Now, this is a point that we've talked about many times before in the name of the Nesivus. Right? The Nesivus that I've discussed many times, that what is the Baruch HaShech? Hayonu v'kimonu v'yigiyonu. It seems to be hopping on the same thing three times over. So the Nesivus in his Perush on the Haggadah Ma'aseh Nisim writes, there are three things that have to come together. And that's what we're praising HaKadosh Baruch Hu for. One is Shechiyonu. Simply, Am Yisrael Chai. Right? The strangest fact in history that Am Yisrael is Chai. People without a land, without a common language, without a central political authority, without a central religious authority. And we exist. 4,000 years from Avraham Avinu until today almost. Don't we? Mighty nations in the world. One that controlled big parts of the world. Faded from history. And if not for archaeological digs, we wouldn't even know that they existed. The Chiti, right? They're mentioned in the Chumash. Avraham Avinu dealt with them, the Benos Chais. Who were the Benos Chais? What were they about? In the year 1900, no one knew the answer to that question. There was no trace of the Chiti, except for the mention in the Tanakh. But there was no trace of them. No one knew what they were about. In the 1930s, apparently in some place in an archaeological dig in Turkey, they discovered clay tablets, which had a type of hieroglyphics on them, but not the Egyptian hieroglyphics. And some professor, I don't know when exactly they were discovered, but in the 1930s, he figured out how to read them. He cracked one sentence, and from that he was able to decipher what their language was. And we found out the Chiti were a people that came from Turkey. They didn't come from the Israel. They came from Turkey. They were a very aggressive people. And they controlled a big chalak of the Middle East in that time. And then they disappeared from the face of the earth. The earth swallowed them up. There was no zecha left of them. And Klal Yisrael survives. Am Yisrael Chai. That's step one. But Am Yisrael Chai does not mean that we're going to blow shofar on Rosh Hashanah, or we're going to pick up a lulav and esrog on Sukkot. He says, what is the meaning of Kayom? So he says, we say in Baruch Shom, or the Rosh Hashanah is Chai lo ad v'kayom lo netzach. Kayom, he says, is in the sense that the Novi in Malachi writes, Ani Hashem lo shanisi. The Rebbeinu Shalom is unchanging. He's not mure, he's not contemporary. The Rebbeinu Shalom is always the same. And his actions are always the same. Ani Hashem lo shanisi. So he says, that's the Indian of Kayam, that Klal Yisrael is Kayam, we're Chai v'Kayam, meaning to say that we live by the same principles, the same eternal principles that we always lived by. Right? Rabbi Akiva would feel comfortable coming into our shul on Sukkot, because we have the same lulav and esrog that he had. So that's Shechiyonu v'Kimonu. But that still doesn't get me to do a mitzvah. The Jewish history has taught us too well. There are many times that we existed and we were committed to the mitzvah, but did we have the practical means of doing that mitzvah? Did we have the practical means? Did I have a lulav on Sukkot? Did I have a matzah on Pesach? Did I have the political tranquility externally, which did not interfere with my ability to carry out a mitzvah? There's a famous story in Queens with Rav Moshe Neumann, Shlita. Now there's a Mishnah. The Mishnah says that a sukkah is possible if it's in a gevoah miyud, right? If it's not 10 tvachim, in a gevoah yud. But if it's 10 tvachim, it's a kosher sukkah. Now, 10 tvachim, the most we can make 10 tvachim into is 40 inches. So, anyone want to sit in a sukkah which is 40 inches from the floor till the schach? It would seem almost an irrelevant halacha. Who in the world, this is what Masechta the sukkah starts with, in the first Mishnah, who in the world would make a sukkah that's less than 10 tvachim high? Talk about this. You can't sit there. Rabbi Neumann, as a child, lived in Germany. And after the rise of the Nazis, Yimach Shemom, it was no longer safe to make a sukkah. But his father wanted to eat in a sukkah. So what did he do? He had a porch. And the wall around the porch was higher than 40 inches tall. So he made a sukkah, which was 10 tvachim. And he sat on the floor, but he ate in the sukkah. So we've had many times in Jewish history that we were Shechiyonu v'Kiyumonu, but we could not yet do the mitzvah. And the receiver says that's the meaning of v'Higiyonu, that we have the practical means and circumstances which allow us to do the mitzvah. And what is this bracha? The bracha is an expression of joy, of simcha, that we have the privilege to serve the Rabbeinu Shalom. When it comes to Chodesh Adar, every time we put on tefillin in the morning, it has to be from that standpoint. From the standpoint of the Simchas Aleif, the chesed that the Rabbeinu Shalom did for us in Purim. I mentioned to Leon last night, there's a very special aspect of Purim that's almost unique in all of Jewish history. Probably we could scratch and find a couple of more examples, but I don't really know them. I know only one other example. In the Alanisim on Purim, we say three things define Purim. we say the Rabbeinu Shaloi Lomo is a farta as atzoso. You foiled his conspiracy. Kilkalta as machshavto. You ruined his thought. V'ashevoyselo gmulo b'roisho. And you, what he wanted to do, you did to him. Solo also was b'rovaleitz, and you hung him. So what are these three things? So there's only one place we find a conspiracy, clearly, an Eitzah. And Haman is so incensed that Mordechai won't bow down to him, so he calls his advisors, right, Chachamov and Yayatzov, to come. And, you know, we have to scheme, what are we going to do with this Mordechai? So they came to the conclusion that he should go to the Melech and take him out. But as they say, timing is everything in life. And Balayla hu nodadoshnas ha-melech. The king couldn't sleep. I don't know how he ever slept. It's a different kasha than I have. Because he was in a period of tremendous counter-revolution. According to Chazal, he'd lost already close to half his empire in counter-revolution against his empire. So how does he live, such a king? How does he survive? He survived on the strength of the secret police. But the secret police needed informants. So Ahasuerus was afraid. Why would anyone be an informant? To know what's going on means you have to be one of the co-conspirators. And then you're going to jump ship and turn on your colleagues and your associates. It could cost you your life doing such a thing. So why are you going to do such a thing? If the reward that you expect is significant enough, you may say, listen, Shalom alai nafshi, I'll jump ship, I'll be well taken care of, and it's not my problem. But if you jump ship and the king doesn't pay off, then it's not worth your while. What am I going to get for all of this trouble? So Ahasuerus was tormented. Balailahu noldoshnas ha-melech. You know, he was concerned, maybe my intelligence services are not providing me with enough information. And why would that be? Because maybe I erred someplace and someone put his neck out for me and I didn't reward him. So once the older people realize that I'm a tightwad and I didn't pay up, so they don't want to supply information. So my life is on the line. Is Balai Lahu Noda Doshnas HaMelech. They wish to woke him up and his anxieties. And he was anxious, but it was not psychotic. He understood reality very well. He was in a dangerous situation. Is Balai Lahu Noda Doshnas HaMelech. And then he reads that Mordechai saved his life. And then he asks him what they did for him, and eventually it comes out he didn't pay him back. And this moment is Balailahu Nodadoshnas HaMelech. Haman knocks on the door. And what does he want? He wants to take out Mordechai. And what was his good fortune? His good fortune is that Ahasuerus spoke first. Because if he'd spoken at that point against Mordechai, Ahasuerus probably would have killed him on the spot. So, that's a farta satsoso. His eitzel. How is he going to get rid of Mordechai? Was foiled. Kilkalta es machshavto. So the Megillah describes one place that they wanted to undo machshavas Haman ben Abedosa. That they gave the Jews, right? Esther comes and she tells Ahasuerus, what are we going to do about machshavas Haman ben Abedosa? She goes to Ahasuerus and she tells him, "Va'yoyimer v'atoymer imalamelech toyiv imatzosi chayin be'inov v'chosher hadavor l'fnei amelech." And the king considers it appropriate. V'tova ani be'inov, and I'm pleasing to him. Yikosev l'hoshiv esas forum, to rescind the missives. What is machasheves Haman ben Hamadosa? The thought The Machshav of Haman. The Machshav of Haman in the Megillah before us was planned to annihilate the Jewish people. It's Kilkalta, it's Machshavta. The Rabbeinu Shalom spoiled his plan. Esther and Mordechai were able to undo his plan, despite the difficulties, because the king wouldn't rescind the letter that he sent. But those two things have happened many times in Jewish history. And when they happen, we usually sing hallel, that Baruch Hashem, we survived the latest enemy to come. But Purim had another aspect to it. That the one that was the adversary of the Jewish people was punished, was killed. That has happened very, very few times. Most of the tyrants in Jewish history that we confronted across our history, we celebrate when we escaped from them. But that's where it ended. The possibility that we would turn the tables on them and inflict upon them that which they intended to inflict upon us did not happen in Jewish history, especially outside Eretz Yisrael. Haman was the rare time that this happened. The only parallel that I know, there may be others, you know, you have to ask the historians, but the only parallel that I know is the capture and execution of Eichmann, Yimach Shemayim V'Zichra. That Klal Yisrael put their hands on him, brought him there to Yisrael, made a mishpat for him, and they executed him. The Vaishnavos Alo Gmula Baroshah. One of the rare moments in Jewish history. So there's a sense of joy, a sense of simcha, and that has to inform the entire Avodas Hashem. That every mitzvah that we do should be an expression of that joy, the joyous service of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. There are somber times in the year. From Rosh Hashanah through Yom Kippur, despite the fact that they're chagim, in some sense, how much is debated, especially Rosh Hashanah, is very greatly debated in the Rishonim. There are Rishonim that allowed fasting on Rosh Hashanah. Not what the Halacha concluded at the end of the day, but there were many Rishonim that fasted Rosh Hashanah. But we don't recite the Hallel on Rosh Hashanah. Why don't we recite the Hallel? This is the time of Shesifrei Chayim U'Meisim Psuchim. A person realizes his life hangs in the balance. So how could I sing Shira at that time? Because Shira is not, again, not an outer expression, it's an inner expression. How could I sing B'leiv Shalom when I have anxiety? A proper anxiety. My life is on the line. So how could I sing Hallel? So we don't. Sukkos. After the Chesimus Adin, then we sing. Then we sing the Hallel. So there's a Voido that's sometimes somber. Not sad, but somber. Gilu Bara'odo. There's a joy, a certain joy, even in the Yom and the Rome of our closeness to Hashem, but Bara'odo. We tremble. So. There's a somber service of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and there's a time of exaltation. So, Kishenichnas Ob Mematin B'Simcha, Kishenichnas Adoros Marbin B'Simcha. We have to be Marbin B'Simcha, and that's a different expression of Avodas Hashem. We react differently to the varied aspects of the Rabbeinu Shel Olam's Hanhaga. Right. The Gemara says at the end of Perek Mokum Shenogu and Psochem, the very last piece of Gemara. Ba'olam hazeh, in this world as it stands, as in this world as it stands, on good tidings, we make a brocha tov ameitiv. On bad tidings, we make a brocha of dayanamis. La'ilam haba, in the time of Mashiach Tzidkeinu, both and everything that happens, we will say a tov ameitiv. So what's pshat in this gemara? How could we say a tov ameitiv when Mashiach comes on these things? So Elo, we have to conclude that everything that the Rabbeinu Shem does is good. So it's good. So I can say a tov ameitiv. So if it's good, so why don't I say a tov ameitiv now? If it's bad, how do I say a tov ameitiv when Mashiach's going to come? And if it's good, why don't I say a tov ameitiv now? It's good. The answer is that when we make a brocha, when we speak of the praise of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it has to be amitis, it has to be genuine. In this world, we perceive toiv and ra. Meaning, our perspective is limited, so we see toiv and ra. And we can't see the ra. I can believe that the ra is toiv, but I can't see the ra is toiv. That I can't do. Consequently, in this world, and what seems good, we see a tov ameitiv. What seems bad, we say dayanamis. Because I'm anguished, but what I see is bad. Lo'osid lovo after Mashiach, the clarity that we will have from what the Rabbeinu Shem wants in this world is such that I will see the good in everything. And therefore, for everything that takes place, I'll be able to say a tov ameitiv, because that will be the way that I feel. So that's the avoido of Purim, the avoido of Chodesh Adar. Purim is another level, but the avoido of Chodesh Adar is an avoido which is mitoch simcha. It's a very, very important thing in the Torah. Rabbeinu Yonah writes that the Maile Osel Yonah, many of the greatest madregas, are not dependent on mitzvahs losase, contrary to popular belief. The real important halachas in the Torah are losase. He says many of the Ikrei HaTorah, many of the most significant halachas are in the mitzvahs aseis. And in one of them he counts, is tachas ha-shalo avatas ha-shem alakecha b'simcha v'tuv leivov. Implicit, it was what is the Torah come? Because we didn't celebrate Hashalom Avatos Hashalom B'Simcha V'Tuv Leivov. We didn't have joy in the service of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Implying that a person has to have joy. And it's one of the Madregas Elyonos. The Arizal said about himself that his highest level of Avodas Hashem was mitoch the simcha of Simchas Torah. The joyous celebration of Simchas Torah was his highest level that he attained. So that's the avodah. That's the chayra what we mean. Mishenichnas ador is marvim b'simcha. It's an inner disposition, but it has to find expression in our entire avodah session. It's a time that the avoid is mitoch simcha. And Rashi is interesting. Let's go back to Rashi in Tainus. Because Rashi has a very, very interesting twist to all of this. There in Choftes Amud Aleph, in the last Rashi on the page, Rashi tells us to follow. Omer Rav Yehuda b'rei d'roshmo b'sheilas b'shmei d'rav k'shem mishenichnas ob ma'atim b'simcha k'ach mishenichnas ador marvim b'simcha. So Rashi says mishenichnas ador yimei nisim hoyu li'Yisrael. These were times of miracles for Klal Yisrael. Which miracles? Purim u'Pesach. Purim u'Pesach. Meaning that this entire period of the year certainly of Adar and Nisan, the Avod is mitoch simcha. Because these are the times that the Rabbeinu Shalom did Nisan for us. And part of the perspective and its importance, you know, there are different times in Jewish history. There's a time when the Shechina is apparent. There are times of Hester when it's hard to see the Shechina. One came to the Beis HaMikdash and there were 10 Nisim which took place every day. Just walked in and all types of miracles happening. So we see the Shechina is manifest. Golus, the Shechina is behester. We have to search for the Shechina. We don't see the Shechina readily. Not that it's not apparent. The Shechina is apparent. But apparent after we look for it. And it does not resolve the problem of the Golus, the appearance of the Shechina. It's only a comfort that the Rebbeinu Shel Olam is with us. We're somehow going to survive all of this. Now that's why, because of the different nature of the Eskala, of the presence of Hashem in Purim, right? It was B'nes Nista. There's nothing that took place here which is obviously miraculous. You can explain everything that took place, you know, political machinations. Nothing which is blatantly miraculous takes place. And the world around us, when all the dust settles, where are we? We're still in Babel. The Beis HaMikdash wasn't built when the story ends. But the Gemara raises the issue in Masechta Megillah that why don't we recite the Megillah? I mean, Hala HaPurim. Right? So the Gemara gives three answers to this question. The Gemara says, one, we don't recite, once we came to Eretz Yisrael, we no longer recite the Hala on a nest that took place in Chutz Lars. Number one. Number two, Kriyas HaMegillah, that's the Hala of Purim. So there is a Hala. And number three is Akati Avdi Achashverosh Hanan. We can't be jumping up and down with such joy because when all the dust settled, we were still subjects of the Persian Empire, and we had a melech, Achashverosh, that when he felt like it was ready to sign off on Haman's plan to kill all the Jews. He was no, as Esther said, Chazal tell us, he was no less a foe of Klal Yisrael than Haman. And in fact, the Asivus tells us, in one regard, he was a more dangerous foe than Haman. Because Haman was a thug. You know, he did not, at the end of the day, he didn't use his head too well. You know, Haman was a mafioso. Listen, what does a mafioso do? If you get in his way, so he sends a hitman, and that's it. He kills you and goodbye. He gets you out of the way. He doesn't finesse the situation, just blunt force. Achashverosh tells Haman that you're not going to succeed. If you're going to go about this like a thug, you're not going to succeed. Why? Because Aviyam Shabbat Shemaim, there's a Rebbeinu Shel Olam out there. Let's not forget about him and the factor. He says, if you want to succeed, you have to do what Bilam did. You have to involve them in immorality, and then Hashem will be angry at them, and then you can first succeed in this world. But if you don't undertake to destroy their ruchnius, in this world, with thuggish undertakings, you're never going to succeed against Klal Yisrael. So he was a more sophisticated and far more dangerous foe than Haman. And when all the dust settles after Purim, is Akati Avdi Achashverosh Hanan. Even if the Rambam seems to assume that the halacha is like the Perish to Kriyos Azui Halila, that's the one that the Rambam quotes in the Yad. But the other facts remain true. The fact that Akati Avdi Achashverosh Hanan remains true. And that explains, if it's according to that Teretz, it's appropriate, according to that Teretz, the more Kriyos Azui Halila, it's appropriate to say Halal. The other two Teretz would say it's not appropriate, because either it was a Neshvot in Chutz Lorz, or we were still subjects of Achashverosh. So it wasn't such a simcha that we should recite the hollow for. But according to the terrorists, the Rambam quotes Kriyosa Zui Halilu. So it begs the question, why do we recite hollow? Why make up a new hollow? What's wrong with the old hollow? We're going to say we wanted to tell the story and tell this Mamela is a hollow, you know. But the bottom line, what do we need? Why all of a sudden we have a different hollow for this Purim? I believe that Rav Soloveitchik Zatzal also dealt with this issue, if I recall correctly. What seems to me in all of this is that even if it's appropriate to say hallel, but it's akati avdi achashverosh shanan, it's not the hallel hamitzri. It's not the hallel of nisum gluyim. It's not the hallel of absolute triumph over our enemies. That's not the hallel that we can have. Our hallel is a more limited hallel. We're in Chutz Laaretz, under foreign dominion, with a king who's a dangerous enemy and a hostile place. So we sing the praises of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but we're going to sing the praises of HaKadosh Baruch Hu in a very different way. Not in the way of Halal HaMitzri, of boundless joy of what has happened. There's a restraint. It's a different Halal. It's a Halal which recognizes the limitations of what took place. There's no way Samigdash, the king is the king, we're at his mercy, and Baruch Hashem, meanwhile Mordechai is doing a good job and raking good money for the king, so meanwhile we're in good shape. But we're in hostile territory. So it's not the place to recite the conventional hallow.
How does the Rav reconcile the decreased Simcha
Na'aleh
with the increased Simcha of...
There's a different aspect. The Halal is decreased because we're in Chutz Laaretz, or it's under foreign dominion, and therefore we can't celebrate to the fullest extent in terms of what Halal is. There's a different Halal, and that is the Halal of survival. Purim is the Halal of survival. The person that was saved, it makes no difference to him when he's saved what is going on in the rest of the world. He's saved. A person that, lo aleinu, experienced the Holocaust and survived the Holocaust, when the war ended and he can pinch himself and he's alive, and he, you know, that's an unmitigated joy. But that's in terms of, you know, each yochid was saved. But in a global sense of what we sing Hallel for, the interface with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, for the nisim that it implies, and the circumstances of Klal Yisrael, that we can't do. That we can't do. One of the things which underscores this, the different nature of the Hatzol of Purim, is everything that's written in Tanakh is supposed to be a limud l'doros. We're supposed to learn something from it. So, from my standpoint, and I think the standpoint of most, the last chapter in the Megillah is anticlimactic. You know, what do we need to do? What's his name? Paul Harvey, the rest of the story. That's it. The story ended at the end of Perek Tes. That's the end of the story of Purim. Yeah, we say the following. We gather together. And to all the countries, the Rishonim Emes, the Kaimitzimei Purim Ailub is Manehem, as Esther, Hamalka, and Mordechai Yehudi did, Mamar Esther Kiam, Divriya Purim Ailub, and Ichtava Sefer. And Esther's undertaking, established Purim. Okay, end of story, finished. What else do you think that the king did? That wherever he could exact tribute, of course he exacted tribute. And that's relevant to what the king, how the king enhanced his treasury. That's, who cares? And you want to know all about Mordechai and the rest of the story of Mordechai, by the way, he was Mishtal Melech Achashverosh, he served as the prime minister of Israel, Godul Yehudim, the greatest of the Jews, Rotzil Rovecho. What do we want in Perakut? All of us, agree that if we drop Perek Yud, we made the Megillah through Pesukim long, we didn't lose anything from our standpoint. So what is the last Perek about? I believe I saw from Rav David Feinstein, a very nice take. He said, how will Klal Yisrael exist in the Golus? That's what it wants to tell me. But we triumphed over Haman, and how are we going to survive it all? We'll survive it all if we serve the interest of the king. The king is getting rich with Mordechai being the viceroy. This is a good system. You know, the system is good. So as long as the king is making money, Mordechai can be the prime minister, the Jews can be safe. It's Shalom Yisrael. But Khalil, if that would be a change in some regard, all bets are off. You know, we the Megillah is setting the tone. We are in Golus. And we'll only survive to the extent that the monarch feels his interest to serve by the Jew being in power. It's a joyful message of Purim, but it's also a sobering message of the limitations of Golus. It's a different hollow. It's a different circumstance. Can we hope that, you know, in Golus, we don't have the hope of really reconciling our problems. We have the hope of surviving our problems, not of reconciling the problems. The anti-Semites are not going away. Achashverosh, the anti-Semite, is alive and well at the end of the Megillah, just as he was in the first pasuk by Yehi Achashverosh. Not a very comfortable thought. The guy that signed off to kill all the Jews is still sitting in the palace. Right now he has a marriage of convenience with Mordechai and Esther. So as long as it endures, so we endure. And the day that it stops, who knows where we go next. So there's joy of the service of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but a sense of Akati of the Achashverosh Hanal, the limitations that we have in Golos, that Simcha has something lacking yet. Still not there. So, but it's hollow. It is a hollow. We sing hollow to the Rebbeinu Shlomo, but in a certain way, in a more restrained sense. Okay, Rabbi Yisrael, add confidence.
Rabbanu couldn't come up with one.